So now I'm going to talk about the qualitative studies that we have conducted. And I want to just give credit to the qualitative inquiry subgroup of the CPCR and FQHC work group. And these are the list of investigators that have been involved in the qualitative inquiry subgroup. And again, I have no disclosures. So our primary research question that we want to address is what factors influence the implementation of evidence-based approaches for cancer prevention and control in the FQHCs, which is very similar to the FQHC survey. But we wanted to take a deeper look at the implementation processes and get a grasp of the meaning and perceptions behind those factors. So what we did was we conducted a series of in-depth personal interviews and focus groups, and we used an adapted appreciative inquiry approach to guide the discussion. Have anyone heard of appreciative inquiry approach before? I'm sorry about the advancing. It's carried around from previous presentations. So appreciative inquiry approach has been used in a lot of primary care settings to generate practice changes. So in this approach, researchers would, in the very beginning of the conversation, tap into the core values, motivations, and strengths of the interviewees by asking their most successful and meaningful experiences that they had at their organization. This has worked really well in our conversations, both in the focus groups and the interviews. The leaders love to talk about their experiences, especially when we ask about their successes. We also have some open-ended questions broadly informed by the Consolidated Framework for Implementation Research as well. So here's an overview of our interview guide. So firstly, we asked them about their successful experiences. Then we tapped onto one particular evidence-based approaches for cancer prevention and control, and we used the 5A's model for tobacco cessation as an example. I do want to mention that the participants did mention other cancer control practices as well, for example, the cancer screenings, and also sometimes they would mention obesity prevention. And then after we asked them about their specific implementation processes related to this cancer control effort, we did tap into the inner setting constructs as well and ask some open-ended questions related to their culture, leadership, and also some of the characteristics of the intervention that would make the implementation easier or harder. Again, this work should not have been done without our partnerships. We recruited our participants through our partners at these organizations, and we sent them email invites to participate in the study. And our sample include majority the top-level FQHC leaders, including the chief executive officers, medical directors, or chief medical officers, the chief operation officers, and then the quality improvement managers. We have a total of 59 participants representing FQHCs in 14 different states, including District of Columbia. And you can see the majority of our participants are medical directors. 29 of them are chief medical officers or medical directors. And then some of them are CEOs, and some of them are chief operation officers and quality improvement managers. For the analysis, we used a very systematic approach, which can be divided into three phases. First, we did a deductive kind of approach using the CIFAR-based model. And then we did another round of coding using an inductive approach or data-driven approach, in which we tried to identify barriers and facilitators to implementation based purely on the data. Then we combined our barriers and facilitators into themes and sub-themes. And what have emerged from the data is a list of levers of change for implementation, which emerged at the individual and organizational level. You can see there's a long list of levers of change right here, but we are just going to focus on three of them today, which is the understanding heroes at the individual level, and also implementation structure and processes at the organizational level, as well as the technical infrastructure and challenges related to EMR. So at the individual level, one of the most important factors that we identify was understanding the key roles, which include the leaders, champions, designated implementers, and the QI person. So the CMOs and CEOs, they often refer to their quality improvement managers as the QI person. So I'm going to use that term throughout the presentation as well. When we talk about organizational changes, we just cannot exclude leaders. And it was very interesting to see how the leaders we interviewed themselves, I mean, the leaders perceive leadership themselves. Actually, a lot of the leaders think that they are the change agents within their organizations. They perceive themselves as the change agents, and they are the one who have the final say regarding whether or not to implement something. And they also describe some pitch battles among the leaders. And sometimes, and in a lot of cases, the CMOs often team up with the CEOs whenever they want to implement something. And then they kind of team up to against the CFO, which is the chief financial officers, to convince the financial officers to get the business plan working for whatever they want to implement. So it was very interesting to see kind of the pitch battles that they described in the data. But one thing that they do all agreed on is that whatever practice changes that you are implementing, the four O's have to be on the same page. The CEO, CMO, COO, and CFO, they all have to be on the same page in order for anything to happen at the organizational level. Actually, one of the audiences today is an expert on leadership. I have to point out Jenny Tektiridis from MD Anderson. She's doing a doctorate dissertation on leadership from the data that we collected. So if you are interested in leadership, please go talk to her after this presentation. So besides leaders, we cannot have the implementation happen without the implementers, and some of the implementers include providers, nurses, medical assistants, frontline staff, as well as the patient navigators. And a key lessons learned that we got from this data is that the leaders value the competencies of the implementers a lot. They put a lot of value on training and building up the competencies of their staff for implementation. And as the quote here said, the training has to be repeated. So now let's switch our gear to the organizational level levers of change, and I'm going to focus on the implementation structure and processes here. You see a lot of levers here, including prioritization, strategic planning, and also creating a change supportive structure, integrating EBAs into the quality improvement process, as well as partnerships. But I'm just going to focus on prioritization and then the integration part, as well as the change supportive structure today, because we just have too much data to present. So organizational process is an important factor that has been repeated by on and on by the leaders. I know that we all have competing priorities in our lives, in our work, but one important lesson that we learned from these leaders is that they would like to focus on one change at a time and do not move on to the next one until one is fully incorporated in the routine, and what they say is until it becomes the bread and butter of their organization. Another interesting finding that we, interesting theme that we got from the data is that an organic, dynamic, and complex quality improvement process already exists in these community health centers. And the QI committee, they play a significant role in the organization's overall functioning. And most often, these QI committee are a multidisciplinary team that collects everyone who is involved in the implementations. The QI committee is often in charge of the decision-making and the overall workflow. So one important lesson that we learned while we are trying to understand what makes implementation of evidence-based practices for cancer prevention and control work in this organization is that cancer prevention and control is not a standalone process in these community health centers. In order to improve the practice, they have to be integrated into this quality improvement process in order to make it bread and butter of the organization. So here's a diagram that was abstracted from the data, the description of the QI process. And you can see the quote here, the leader is very confident about the implementation because they have this QI process in place at their organization. Now that we have a very good QI process, we really need the change supportive structure to keep the process going. And this structure includes, but not limited to, the availability of time of the staff and also some internal resources that can be leveraged for a particular change or implementation effort. And then also top-down support from the leadership. When I talk about supportive structure, I cannot exclude the PDSA model as well. How many of you are familiar with this model? I assume that you all know about it because many of the participants in this qualitative studies, they have been involved in this health disparity collaborative that was initiated by the Bureau of Primary Care a few years ago. And then for these individuals, they talk on and on about the PDSA model that they learned from this learning collaborative. And then they've been using it to implement any changes. So we are really, really glad that they have this PDSA infrastructures in place to implement future changes. And like this quote said, whenever there's a change, let's PDSA it. It's just incredible that they're using it as a verb. So last but not the least, I just want to mention some of the technical infrastructure challenges related to the EMR. And as you can see in the data presented in Shimping's presentation, they are faced with a lot of challenges when using EMR system, even though they provide a broad array of benefits as well. I just want to highlight the connectivity challenges right here because a lot of the FKHCs are referring patients to other services for cancer screenings and also tobacco cessation. But a lot of them mention that there is such a difficulty to get data back from these other organizations into their EMR system. One of the clinic, actually many of the clinic, are sending their patients to the quit line automatically through their EMR system, but they cannot get automatic feedback on patients' data from the quit line, and therefore make it very difficult to follow up with these patients to know whether or not they have contacted the quit line or not, or whether or not they have quit it. And I just want to highlight some of the creative solutions that they have right now to address some of the technical challenges. Basically, the FQHCs are using paper forms to complement the functionality of EMRs right now. And finally, just a brief summary of the findings. Obtaining buy-in from all key players in the implementation is very important, and increasing their competencies in the process is also very important. And also, successful implementation involves prioritization, integration, and also creating a change supportive structure. If you have any questions, I would encourage you to hold on to those questions and bring your comments to our discussion later. We would love to hear about your opinions, your experiences, and how do you think these data could be used for your practice and for research as well. Thank you.